All right. Welcome to Microphones and Monsters. And we are going to be start off with introducing all the hosts, DM and players. And we're going to start with our first player.
Richard Collins. You may know me from our other podcast, you know, the couple of you out there that listen to it, Something More to Podcast. But I don't know. I've been playing D&D for a long time, about 16 years now since I started. And I've been playing at least one campaign for the most part throughout, sometimes up to five.
Oh, wow.
But that was insane times when I had nothing better to do.
Yeah, I think you got the most experience here.
Very possibly. But anyway, so I'm going to be playing Alistair, who is a Dreamlands cat. I know that a lot of people, especially if they're not up on at least certain parts of Cthulhu mythos, may not be familiar with what Dreamlands cats are. So I feel like I probably should give at least a brief rundown. Basically, all cats have a level of sentience that is generally unused in the real world. Generally, it's only apparent whenever they're in the Dreamlands, which is basically the land of sleep, like where all of the dreams actually reside. They will either be there mentally whenever they're taking naps and things like that, and they're free to explore the Dreamlands as they wish, or they can actually go there physically through portals that will randomly appear and disappear wherever. They also have the innate ability to detect where these portals are at any given time, or at least nearby ones. So they also have the ability in times of great stress or necessity to be able to pull that level of sentience into the real world. And that's where they become a Dreamlands cat rather than just a normal everyday house cat. So Alistair is a completely jet black cat. Black fur, head to toe, like no bits of any other color, all black. One thing that you would notice about Alistair at this time is that one of the eyes kind of glows with this almost flame-like green flickering.
Which left or right?
Left.
Okay.
Important clarification.
Important clarification.
Very important.
Yes. But left eye glows with a kind of green flame-like flickering. Alistair is a warlock, and a warlock of the elder god, Tulsha, who is basically a flame-like entity that kind of presides over knowledge, and mostly knowledge of future events and things that have yet to come, prophecies, things like that. But there's... I don't know, like with anything, more to everything. But I think that's a pretty good primer on what's going on.
Okay. And I will put it out there that Dreamlands cats, the sentient cats, are like regular citizens in society and stuff like that. Like, it's not a secret to people or anything like that. Like, there are like prominent citizens that go about their lives as sentient cats and hold jobs and all that kind of stuff too. So,
right. I guess another quick aside for that, speech with Dreamlands cats is a little weird because they don't really have the wherewithal to be able to form proper words. But it's generally kind of understood that people that are around them, for a long time or, have to deal with them closely for at least a few weeks, generally are able to understand them.
Yeah. And to fully understand, it would be like a week or something like that. But you can get in this setting, you can gain the gist of what a Dreamlands cat is saying within like an hour or two. If you're like wanting them to know what you're saying, you can make sounds that are similar to common or other languages.
Right.
That way it's not really bogging down.
Two meows for yes, one meow for no.
Yeah.
Meow.
But to fully understand everything you're saying, they would have to spend a lot of time with you.
Right.
Which parties usually would.
That's true. He also carries a small sack on his back that contains his warlock tome.
Oh, yeah. Another thing with your cat, this, like, it's a cat, so it doesn't have hands.
Right.
But it has a tail that can grab stuff.
And more importantly, Mage Hand.
Yes.
Mage Hand. Is it Mage Hand or is it Mage Paw, to be fair?
Well, considering that I need it to have opposable thumbs,
yeah, so it has I'm going to go with hands.
I just, duplicating the useless paws probably wouldn't be very helpful.
I just love the image of
just
like
have
a
like
cat's,
invisible paws,
a cat's,
just kind of fumbling
a cat's
around
paw, and then another paw, and it's just like, this does nothing. It's just bigger.
I can play with three strings at once.
Oh, man.
Okay, it's my turn. My name is Max Steele. No, not that Max Steele, the one you're referring to, that terrible movie and semi-okay cartoon show of the 2000 series. I will be playing a dull human. I know it's not interesting, but it's kind of what I wanted to do. I will be playing a new class that came out with Eberron, known as the Artificer, which is basically take a person with magical proficiency and being able to infuse that magical proficiency into mundane items to make them less mundane and much more useful. Julian, which is the name of the character, Julian Cottage, he's a doctor. He's been studying various species and subspecies of the Cthulhu mythos, and as well as has a panache for handling hazardous materials. And it's very prevalent because he carries this burnish orange breathing mask over his neck at all times, and usually puts the mask on when he's performing any kind of work, be it, you know, autopsies or handling dangerous materials or stuff he doesn't know about. Usually wears a long white lab coat, very dirty, very tattered, doesn't like to change it. He's very thin, almost gaunt, with short dark hair with a little bit of greenish tint to it. And yeah, that's about it. That's, you know, at least everything we're going to go through right now. In next episodes, I'm actually going to get a better mask. I had a little surgical mask I brought with me, but during our test recording, it doesn't really have a difference when we're doing the recording. So, probably going to get like a painter's setup and, you know, do a little, Immortan Joe or, Bane voice, see what that goes like. So yep, but that's me. So yeah, D&D experience. I've never finished a campaign. I've played several, and I've done a monk before. I did a famous investigator before in one campaign that was ridiculous. Inventing all sorts of like mundane stuff that's never been heard of in the D&D universe, like a pulley. So that was really dumb, but I loved it. But yeah, I really like D&D, and this is the one campaign where like I've never done that kind of setting like this before, and any kind of Cthulhu stuff is super awesome. Just see how many hours I put into Bloodborne. It's not healthy.
Bloodborne is fun.
Bloodborne is amazing. So yeah, now I'm ready to dive into it. So yeah, thanks for letting me host on.
Thank you for joining us.
All right. Well, my name's Steven Sides. I am relatively new to Dungeons & Dragons in that I have only played about 6 or 7 games of a different campaign before starting this one. I started at level 9, which was pretty sweet. But this is the first campaign I'm starting from the very beginning. I am going to be playing Victor Stodge, who is a crypt folk. We're playing out of the Sandy Peterson's Cthulhu Mythos 5th edition book. Crypt folk is the name we've given what is referred to in that as Mythos Ghoul, just to avoid confusion with other types of ghouls. And also because our setting is set like around like 1920s, 30s, you know, technology type stuff. So it's moved forward in the future. So Mythos ghouls in the, as it was written, are sort of social outcasts. They collect corpses because they have to eat dead people as their primary form of sustenance. So crypt folk, they're more the keepers of like mortuaries and funeral homes. Like they provide the services for the families of those who are dead. They also provide, they create sort of little artifacts for the families, because when they eat the corpses, they often get memories or traits of the people that they've eaten. My character isn't fond of being a crypt folk, so that will come into play later. Crypt folk generally look more... Crypt folk kind of resemble a mangy werewolf with hooves. also, my character always wears a trench coat and a fedora a la Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Amazing.
to sort of conceal the more crypt folk aspects of, you know, his appearance. Doesn't really live with the other crypt folk at all. Kind of a social outcast from them. But I think that's most of the important stuff about my character right now.
Mm-hmm. And your class?
Oh, I am a monk. I've never played a monk before, so that'll be good, considering I've only played one other class, and that was Bard. So it'll be a fun...
Fury of Blows.
Do I have that yet? I think
you
do.
Yeah, you definitely have that.
Yeah, there we go.
I'll be using
Flurry of Blows many times.
Well, he also has a Psychic Feast.
Oh, yeah, he's got
Psychic
the Feast.
Yeah,
that would be really cool.
So that's the ability to use... as a monk, I'm a necrophage monk, which is also a new class of monk. And that class allows me to gain those memories or insight from an opponent in battle, like in the heat of battle. So that should be interesting if I can use it properly.
Yeah, and it uses your key and mm-hmm. and like you have more control over your psychic feast, because when you eat a human, you gain their memories. And and you get to kind of pick and choose what memories you want to get with key.
Oh, yeah.
As well as do extra damage, so it's basically Flurry of Blows with the little bonus.
Yeah, but I get to have a snack in the middle of the battle.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about it. So I'm the new guy, and I might ask a silly question once or twice or make some mistakes, so stay tuned.
He protect, he attack, but more importantly, he loved to snack. Dead people.
And I am your DM.
Who said that?
Adam Culbertson. And again, like Richard said, we do something more to podcast together. This is our second podcast. The one that was our first planned podcast before the other one. The other one just happened. But yeah, I've been playing off and on. I've been playing D&D off and on. A little bit of Pathfinder for the past 10 to 15 years, something like that, with huge gaps of time in between. So I originally played with second edition. Whenever 3 and 3.5 was out, I was still playing second edition, and then made the jump to Pathfinder and then fifth edition about a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's when I started DMing a year ago and instantly wanted to do something like this. Like maybe a couple months into that campaign, I was like, I want to record it. And this is what's happened a year later. I definitely like the Cthulhu Mythos setting, because it's just, I don't know, I'm really into that kind of stuff. Like I've played the shit out of Bloodborne. I love that whole setting. Hell, whenever I was before even starting the campaign last year, I was telling you, I was like, I want to create a setting that has to do with Eldritch Horror and all this kind of stuff. And then it evolved to this.
It's just serendipity that Sandy Peterson happened to release a fifth edition version of Cthulhu Mythos.
Yeah.
Right after we were talking about it, really.
Yeah. It completely fixed all the issues that I was having on like making up rules and classes and everything like that, which in this setting I have taken out a lot of like stuff involving like a lot of like discrimination against races and stuff like that. Like I like goblins to be a part of society. I don't think all goblins are evil or all bugbears are evil. And I wanted to include everybody, which also coincidentally Eberron added them as player races as well. So, yep. And I was already planning on doing it before that stuff came out. So this setting, it's, the world is, Dunzal Terra, and I'm making it up as we go. I've got one town.
That's
where we start. I really like the Mythos classes or the Mythos races, like the Dreamlands Cat and the Mythos Ghoul. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we went with that. And I freaking, like, when I was reading over the Unearthed Arcana for the Artificer, I was like, yeah, yeah. And I was sending you all kinds of links.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like,
wait, you just make a bag of holding? Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I'll play that class. Why not?
And then, like, after I sent you all the different Unearthed Arcana versions of Artificers, like, boom, Eberron drops. And I'm like, hey, I bought the book. Like, let's do this.
It. Do it. Yeah, I got the...
I like the way it's set up. I personally think on paper it looks balanced to me, mm-hmm. and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, especially as a doctor. It should be. I think it's going to be really cool. And these guys made amazing backstories for motivation for their characters, and like they just blew me away. And they will eventually come out.
Yes. Yeah, we needed. I know you did an initial recording session for Alistair's, and mm-hmm. I listened to it. It sounded dope.
Oh, it was amazing. I loved how it turned out.
Yeah.
Don't worry, you'll eventually get to hear it probably sometime later.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we eventually come into a recording conflict, like, we don't have anything to release. All right, backstory, go.
And we discussed that we wanted to keep episodes short, so it's not like you don't have to dedicate an hour and a half to 2 hours per episode. We wanted to keep it short to 30 to 50 minutes. That's our range that we're pushing for. And without getting too much of a backlog, we have to release twice a week. By doing that with the amount of time that we're going to be recording, so we will be releasing on Mondays and Fridays of every week. Mm-hmm. And at the end of every month, we want to do get all the hosts together and us just talk about what's been released so far at that time.
Do we have a catchy name for it yet?
For, oh, like
like the recap episode?
You mean like the Talking Dead or something
like that? Yeah, something like that, yeah.
No, I don't think yet, but if you've got ideas.
Microphones and morons.
Somehow still alive.
Yeah.
I'll brainstorm, see if I can think of something.
I found some awesome music that was themed for Cthulhu Mythos kind of stuff and themed for people to use in D&D games. And Marco Mazzi did the music for that from Fallen Highway Studios. And it's just amazing stuff. It really is. I have every single one of his songs that he's produced to use on this podcast. So we have a large amount of music.
Thank you very much.
Yes. But yeah, I think is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it. I don't like have any like official handles or anything like that.
Yeah,
but,
no.
If there is a need for it, well, I'll make something. Sure.
No.
If you guys really want to talk to me outside of... you know, whoever's listening or, you know, people in the room, they got my numbers, but like, you know, if you want to be like, hey, you know, what do you think about so-and-so, I'll create a Twitter or we'll create a Twitter, of course, for the channel. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, we already have a Twitter for the channel. It's Microphones and Monsters, at Mikes and Monsters. It's really easy.
At Mikes?
Mikes, M-I-C-S. Yes.
Do you spell out
and Mikes and?
Yeah, is it the ampersand?
A-N-D. Mikes and Monsters at Twitter.
Yes. And we've already been building up a following on there, too. Like, at the time we're recording this, it's at, like, 80 followers now. So, yeah.
Oh, shit. We've done absolutely no work, and people are already following us.
We appreciate it.
Within the actual play podcast community and D&D community, like, I've already been just trying to be a part of that community, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, dropping little breadcrumbs.
Networking.
Yeah. Networking. That's exactly what it is.
That's the word.
Networking.
I couldn't think of it. I'm all stuck on like getting this story done.
Yeah, the crawling chaos is coming out of his brain right now. We're talking about that we're getting.
We got some creepy little monsters coming.
Oh no!
But yeah, I think that's it.